Welcome to the Earth Keepers Podcast. This podcast is for people who seek new and better ways to love and care for the Earth. It's a podcast for anyone who is deeply concerned about the harm being done to the environment on a local and global level. It's a podcast that builds community and connection between people of like heart and mind, people who believe that Earth care should be integrated into every aspect of life, and for many in the Earth Keepers community, that includes our spiritual lives. Welcome, friends, to the Earth Keepers Podcast. Hey, Earth Keepers. So, in the last episode, we talked about the enormous impact that relatively mundane choices like what we eat have on the health of the planet. Well, in this episode, we're going to talk about another part of our everyday habits that we might not normally think about in earthkeeping terms. In this episode, we'll be talking about what we wear and about the impact of the clothing choices we make on the planet as a whole. Now, to get us thinking about our own fashion habits, let me ask you a couple of questions. First, though, pick just one item of clothing that you're wearing right now. Do you know where that garment was made, or how far it had to travel to get to you? Or let me ask this, do you know anything about the people who actually made the fabric that this item is made of, or anything about the people who stitched the pieces together, or how much they were paid to do it? Do you even know what this item of clothing is made of? Or importantly, what impact the making of that material had on the environment? I think a lot of us would be hard-pressed to answer even one of those questions, but for those of us who long to be better at loving and caring for all creation, these are the kinds of questions we need to be asking of ourselves and our habits. That's why we're talking today to Kathleen Audette, owner of an image consulting firm called Allegory. She has made it her mission to promote awareness about the things we wear and to think about social and environmental justice when it comes to buying, owning, and even getting rid of clothing. Also, as part of our focus on greening all locations in this season of the podcast, Kathleen shares the story of how she has found ways to do good for people and planet through her work as an image consultant. Kathleen, it is so good to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I'm going to have to tell you, this is a first for the podcast. We have never spoken to an image consultant, so I am sure I'm going to learn a lot, and our listeners are going to appreciate any wisdom you have to share. So I have a question for you. Let's just start by defining what it is that you do. What's the range of possible objectives and outcomes in terms of what an image consultant does? Why do people come to you?
People come to me because they're either uncomfortable, they're frustrated, or they're worried about their appearance. There's always this disconnect between who they are and how they want to be perceived. There's a gap. And so I'm there to help them with that because they see other people around them dressed the way they want to be dressed, and yet they can't seem to find that for themselves. So what they're really looking for is confidence. But they usually have too many clothes, they can't make outfits, and so they're looking for someone to help them. And sometimes they're just up-leveling in their jobs or their business, so they want to be seen as credible, and they don't know how to make their clothes work for them. Clothes have a nonverbal cue. They're speaking long before you open your mouth, so they sort of recognize that by the time they get to me, and they know that it matters how they look.
You mentioned that confidence is key. It makes me wonder if people might come to you for more pragmatic reasons at the start, but I wonder, did their objectives, their goals change over time when they're working with you?
They do, because what happens is that they think that image consulting or styling is all about me just walking into their closet one day, looking at their clothes. We go shopping a couple of times, we come back, and voila, they have this closet full of clothes and they know exactly what to do. And that's just TV. That doesn't work that way. Getting dressed is a very inside out process. And so how you think, how you feel is reflected in what you wear. And then what you wear reflects that back out into the world. So by the time we've started working together, they realize it's going to be a little deeper, a little more work than they expected. But I try and build trust at the beginning so they'll stay with me. I had a client the other day that was literally laying on her bed crying, like, I don't want to do this. And I said, it's okay. I have kids. I get it. You know, don't worry about it. We'll make it. And we made it through. And she's doing great today.
Oh, it sounds like there's real personal transformation involved in this whole endeavor to dress differently.
Yeah, I think because we're doing things like unearthing words that resonate with them, and then I try and help them translate those words into the design elements in the clothing. And so it's a very organic process. By the time they are sort of setting out on their own to work, I say to them, you know, I don't want you to need me anymore. I want you to be able to do this yourself. I want you to be empowered and confident to get dressed every day because it comes from who you are, not me telling you what I think you should wear. And that, I think, is where they get the confidence that they didn't even know they had, because I'm sort of taking something that was inside and making it visible and then showing them, how do you dress that? How do you dress the person that you are, the person that God created you to be, with clothes, and then just go out into the world and really just not think about your clothes anymore. That's a goal for me. It's stop thinking about what you're wearing, because you got a lot of work to do in the world. Get up, get dressed, have this sort of healthy self-forgetting, and get on with your life. That's my goal with people when I work with them.
I love that. I'm wondering, what is the path to becoming an image consultant? In terms of your journey, what are some of the things that influenced you to bring you into your present vocation?
I grew up with a grandmother that sewed, and I was with her a lot. And so I really got used to being around fabric and pattern and art. And I just grew up loving art and more of an artsy person than a math person. And as I got older and became an English teacher, I realized that I really wanted to go back to doing something in the artistic field. And so I took some classes in color and decided that, yeah, I can do this, not even knowing that there was such a deep value in helping people. So it was a few years of helping people with color and some of their clothes, sometimes makeup. But what I recognized was that I was walking away and they weren't empowered, like I talked about, to do things for themselves. And so along the way, as I was working, I had a stroke and I couldn't dress myself. I couldn't figure out what to do. And it became pretty depressed. So I reached out to an image consultant friend of mine and I said, you know, what do I do? And she said, you have got to get up and get dressed every single day. And I said, I don't want to. And she said, this is your job right now. You have to get up and get dressed. And it took a couple months for me to recognize that the clothes were working from the outside in and really just helping me see myself differently as I went through therapy and just getting better. And then I realized I wanted to help people from a very internal place. And so I went to image consulting school and really dug into that and decided this is a work that is not just personal, but it really feels like I can help people see themselves the way God sees them. And that's my mission every single time, whether they're a spiritual person or not, is I want that moment when they're looking in the mirror and they see something amazing that's them. And I'm like, haha, you are actually seeing yourself in a beautiful way that God sees you too. And you didn't see that before. It was blocked somehow. So God brought me along and it's been a great journey. It's hard work, but it's the privilege to do it.
Sounds like the trials and the suffering were really a part of forming you in order to understand other people's pain in some ways.
Yeah, for sure. I try not to get too attached to my clients, but I really try and build a trust with them so that as they're going through the hard things, they always feel like they can reach out about anything. I do sometimes refer people to therapists or things like that because they need that. But I also find on the positive side that they become someone that's able to go out into the world and be better. Sometimes they're just a better parent. Sometimes they're just a better partner. Sometimes I see that they are kinder. I really like that it can at least see some change with people and that it's on the positive side.
In this podcast, of course, we deal a lot with all things environmental, earth advocacy, earth respect, ways that we can live more sustainably. So I'm wondering, speaking broadly, what actually makes an industry like fashion sustainable or ethical or green?
Determining whether the fashion industry is truly sustainable or green is pretty complex and multifaceted at this point. But some things to consider are that sustainability in fashion, it can mean a lot of different things to different people. But really, the bottom line is that we want to be creating fashion that doesn't harm nature and doesn't harm people, which means slowing down. It's got to slow down because we have too many clothes. We have too much going into the landfills. We have too many chemicals polluting the earth. And so there's environmental sustainability, which is like conservation, waste reduction, pollution control, all things that I'm sure you're familiar with. And then there's the social responsibility, which is like consumer education. And also affording the things that are made by sustainable companies, they tend to be more expensive. Of course, the ethical sustainability, which is like fair labor conditions and animal welfare. And then my favorite, which is traceability. So those are the two places I came into sustainability and fashion. The two main reasons I came in and really wanted to make a difference was the child labor practices, which are unfair, and also traceability, being able to know where your garments come from. And that's happening. It's starting to happen more outside of the United States, but it will get here eventually.
Yeah, it reminds me actually of the last podcast conversation I had with a nutritionist, and she was making some of the same points that we often don't think about where our food comes from, how it was made, who harvested it, and there are all kinds of environmental and social justice issues that are involved in the production and transport of food. So she was really advocating for maybe a more proactive and intentional approach to eating, like take time to try to find out as much information as you can. And it sounds like that's also what you're advocating for, that you think there are ways perhaps that we can pay attention better and there are ways that we can find out where our clothes are coming from.
Absolutely. I mean, the idea that we don't know where our clothes come from at this point is a little bit ridiculous, but the fashion industry has not changed in over 100 years. And so it's slow. There is a lot of things happening behind the scenes, but I think there are some ways to become knowledgeable about what you're buying by looking at the fabrics, first of all, really looking to see if the fibers of the fabric are sustainable fibers, and then to see where it's made. I really, really recommend to my clients all the time that they watch the movie The True Cost, but also just look up the Rana Plaza collapse, which happened in Bangladesh in 2013. It really shook the fashion industry. And the fact is that there were 1,134 people that died, most of them women, more than half of them women. There were children in that. The company that owned the building knew that there was something wrong. They had already evacuated the bottom floors the day before, and yet they kept the garment factories on the top floor that make the clothes that we see today in the mall and Target, Walmart. They were making those clothes because there was a deadline. And so when that happened, I think it changed fashion enough because there was some knowledge about what was going on. And that was a big thing, is that we're not aware in the United States about what's going on in the fashion world, which is why I'm advocating for awareness first before anything else.
I want to come back to something that you said earlier. You used the phrase, we have too many clothes. And that to me opens up a new frontier in this environmental and social justice question. Yes, we can definitely be more aware of the sourcing, but I wonder how many people actually question the fact that we need so many clothes. There's just like a fundamental systemic cultural issue there that makes the fashion industry possible, that makes the demand so extreme and makes the system have to process things so quick and respond to that demand that you have to question the demand, I think.
Absolutely. I think it's imperative, particularly because it's a biblical mandate to just be aware of what you're doing to the earth and to other people who make your clothes. You know, that's why we need the traceability. But the idea that we have too many clothes is not something that we're used to. What happens with fast fashion is that, and that's those clothes that are just made every day, all the time. We have too many of them. They're in the stores. On a weekly basis, there's new ones. But I think what happens is that when we start buying clothes, we have the tendency to think, oh, I can get them easily. I need one more piece just to make something right. And we just aren't thinking about getting dressed. And we look at our overstuffed closets and we think, if I just got the right piece, then all of this would magically disappear, you know, which is where the frustration comes in. But for sure, I'd be very wealthy if I had a dime for every single person that said to me, I don't have very many clothes in my closet. And every single closet I go into, 100% of the time, there's more than 200 pieces. So there's this disconnect of what we think are a lot of clothes and what are actually a lot of clothes, because our landfills are full of them. There's definitely a gap here in the awareness.
One of the themes that we're exploring in the podcast in season 5 is this question, what does it mean to green our vocations? I wonder for you personally, what has it meant to green the vocational practices of an image consultant? How have you found ways to make your work more earth-honoring and even restorative?
Yeah, that is such a beautiful question. I think that sustainable practices and creation care, which is really what we're talking about, right? Caring for the earth, caring for people, this sort of earth-honoring advocacy is really an ancient concept. It's not something that's come along in the last 3 or 4 decades. It started in Genesis, something that we're supposed to do. We're supposed to green our vocations. We're supposed to go along with the original plan of taking care of the planet. And so I think our allegiance should be to the voice of scripture when it comes to getting dressed. What I try and do to green my practices is I really try to point people back to scripture, the scriptures that tell us that nothing really belongs to us, especially the earth. We're tenants, we're stewards. I really encourage my clients to be good stewards of their clothes, to mend them, to keep them longer than they're used to keeping them. I try and advocate for the beauty, the sanctity of God's creation and the environment and the beauty of that. I really talk about that a lot. And I really think the stewardship of the land and care for people is not a political issue. It's a biblical issue. It's a moral issue. In greening it, for me, it's just bringing people to the place of, if you are a follower of Christ, then you have some obligations to understand what you're wearing, what you're putting on your body, and where it came from. We need to bridge that gap, because there's been so many times I've come and talked to people and they're like, well, this is just a political issue and it doesn't matter. And I'm like, oh, no, no, no. This is biblical. You can be both an environmentalist, quote unquote, and a person of faith. And that is a realization that a lot of people are either uncomfortable with, or they're just like, really? I didn't know that.
In your profession, do you find that more of your clients are people of faith? And if not, do you find yourself using different language, different motivations to help them understand the problem and the solution?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say the majority of my clients are not from a spiritual background. They may have some faith, but it's probably not the kind we're talking about. The follower of Christ holding on to the biblical values. And what I find is that a lot of my clients are actually more in tune with what's going on in the world sometimes than the people in the church. They're more likely to be recycling or composting or caring where their clothes come from. They're really happy to downsize and to minimize. So that's a hard one for me. And I have been talking a lot about this quote that I actually got out of Sandra Richter's book. She has a book called Stewards of Eden, which I love. And if it's okay, I'm going to read it to you, because I read it to all my clients now. It's short, but it really is the epitome of what I'm trying to do. And he just says, quote, I used to think that the top environmental problems were biodiversity loss, ecosystem collapse, and climate change. I thought that 30 years of good science could address these problems. I was wrong. The top environmental problems are selfishness, greed, and apathy. And to deal with these, we need a cultural and spiritual transformation. And we scientists don't know how to do that. So that covers both sides. That covers the people believing and the ones that are not. And James Speth he had a lot of titles, but he was on the president's task force on global resources and environment. He's been a leader in the field for years. So for him to say what he said and to go to this moral imperative in social and environmental justice is big.
I agree with you about thinking that people in the church oftentimes are maybe a bit behind in terms of understanding what earth care looks like. I'm wondering if you have ideas, thoughts about why that is.
Well, I think it touches on what I said earlier, that people in the church think that it's a political issue and that it's an environmental issue that is for somebody else. It's not something the church should deal with because the earth is just going to burn up and go away when Jesus returns, which is not exactly true. But the fact that it's just somebody else's problem, it doesn't have anything to do with a biblical mandate to understand social and economic justice in the environment. Because I've come up against people in the church where I go to talk about it, and they're very resistant. Like, that's not something we talk about here. That's just for liberals, or that's just for Republicans or Democrats, or they do this sort of slicing down the middle and there's these two sides. It's frustrating, for sure.
Well, it makes me wonder if there isn't, on some level, part of your vocation that involves persuading people to see differently. Because it's one thing for someone from the pulpit to make that statement that this is our issue, the church is called the stewardship, etc. And I think those kinds of statements do get resisted. But I wonder if there isn't a way that you're bringing that in more subtly to people's attention, to people's awareness, and maybe getting beyond those politicized defenses.
I think at the basic level, what I'm doing is when I'm in their closet, I see the frustration with the number of clothes they have. And I point out over and over again that these clothes are frustrating them because they're made by the fast fashion industry. And look at that, you washed it once and the seams are bunching. You washed it once and it's falling apart. You washed it once and there's threads everywhere. And trying to connect what they're seeing with why they're seeing it. First of all, you're wasting your money. That's a big pain point for people. And I think this just low cost of clothing encourages this constant sense of need. And so I put people on fast, not to buy, and also things like black fast, not wearing black as much, because that's all the manufacturers make for us now is black, white, and gray, because it doesn't cost them very much money. And so those frustrations are when I try and bring things up for people. And in my social media, I'm really getting firm on putting out things about what's happening to the children, what's being allowed that should never be allowed, and the low wages and just how they're treated. And again, that traceability issue is big for me.
Well, whether or not your clients claim to be people of faith, clearly you are motivated on spiritual levels. And I'm really curious about how you think theologically about your work. And maybe specifically, how do you connect your objectives, say, of working with a person's self-image or the expression of self as part of your mission, really, as a Christ follower?
Yeah, the work I do, I think, is just a privilege allowed me by the Creator. I think we're invited to participate in His work and not just receive from Him. We have to join Him in the work. I absolutely think that I bring in the spiritual and theological aspects into my work. And I think the reason is that I read the Bible a lot. I just see it in front of me. It just stands out all the time. It's the reason I pivoted from Your Authentic Image, which was a beautiful company and still has merit, but it really just focused on I. And really, now that I'm Allegory Styling, which is the company I have, I just feel like it more reflects what I do, because allegory is a parable or an analogy that reflects the fact that we're telling more than one story, right? We're telling this inside story of who we are reflected on the outside that people see. And then there's the story of our clothes, which have a backstory. So I feel like I've just taken it a step further to enter into the things that have always been on my heart. As a theologically committed person, as a follower of God, I just feel compelled to advocate for beauty, for the sanctity of God's creation, of God's people. I believe that creation care is a ribbon that goes through all of Scripture. And a few years ago, I really felt I heard clearly from God that I needed to bring awareness to the fashion industry, to the people in the church, to believers in Scripture. There's lots of stylists and even some image consultants in the world talking about sustainability and creation care. But for me, there's this lack of advocacy by Christ followers to be good stewards and to know the biblical truths about why it's important to care about the earth. And so my mission when working with people is actually to get them to think less about their image, like we talked about before, to just have this sort of healthy self-forgetting. And I'm 100% connected to all of that now. And it gets me up in the morning, gets me going, gets me excited.
Well, speaking of being motivated by the desire to help others to be better caretakers of our beautiful planet, let's take a quick break to hear about an opportunity for learning and personal formation that we're making available to listeners to this podcast.
Hi, this is James. Do you ever wonder what it means to practice your faith in a time of ecological crisis? Or what skills and practices are needed to lead communities towards new forms of identity, community, and mission that bring healing and renewal? These are the questions that Circlewood's upcoming Ecological Christian Leadership Cohort will be exploring. This cohort will run from late February to mid-May, and my co-leader, Forrest, and I will help participants expand their understanding of eco-theology and spirituality, see how faith should be informed and shaped by the places we live and work, and learn how to guide others on the journey. It is open to anyone with a leadership role, whether that's formal or informal, paid or volunteer, in their church, community, or workplace. We have an interesting and diverse group already forming that includes a few pastors, a nonprofit leader, a nature retreat guide, a camp administrator, and a filmmaker, and there's still room for a few more. I believe this creative cohort can transform your faith and leadership, as it did for this past participant.
I'm Halleck Greider, and I pastor Maplewood Presbyterian Church in Edmonds, Washington. I was part of the first Ecological Leaders cohort last year, and it was one of my favorite and most enriching experiences in pastoral ministry in recent years. Because it was more than just learning about ecological issues and environmental activism. For me, it was a retooling of my entire view of leadership and theology. Being part of the cohort began to change how and what I preach, how I lead the congregation, and has even influenced my spiritual journey as I am learning how to see myself and everything as part of the great web of life that God has created. An equally enriching aspect of the cohort was our time together. Hearing others' stories, ideas, and struggles encouraged me and reminded me that I am not alone in this work. So for those who will participate, be open to surprises and serendipity, and know that this is simply a beginning point for a new trajectory in your discipleship and leadership.
I hope you will consider joining us. You can learn more and register at circlewood.online.
I can definitely see why you chose allegory as the title of your current company. I mean, the emphasis on story is pretty profound. The story is everywhere in fashion. I love the idea that everyone has their personal story or stories, and they want to tell that story in part in the way they dress, but at the same time, they're putting on stories as they get these different items of clothing, and sometimes those stories are at war with who we want to be. That seems very profound to me, that emphasis on story.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. That's why working with people is a little bit complicated in all the best ways. Clothing's a second skin, and so it's right up next to you, and that is very personal, what is right up on your skin. And now that we know that the polyester fibers that are made in the world are polluting our oceans, just polluting, we've also discovered that they are harming our bodies too. So there's just lots of stories to tell, and I'm out there. I want to tell them all, and I want people to be aware of what they're wearing so they can make the decisions that they need to make for themselves according to their own values.
So you're a storyteller, but you're also a story evoker. You help people, it sounds like, to tell stories.
Yeah, sometimes a little too much, but I'm trying.
Well, I want to get a little practical here. And you had mentioned, of course, that we have too many clothes. At least folks in the West tend to have too many clothes. Can you offer ideas about how people might maybe minimize their wardrobe or green their wardrobe in ways that actually make a difference?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll just give you some highlights, some of the things I do with my clients. First of all, I say, shop your own closet first before you go shopping. Just go in there and look for something. Usually if you dig around enough, there's an outfit in there, there's something to wear. That's what we do first when I work with people, is we shop their closet after we've done the pre-work, of course. But here's a couple of practical things. I've been telling this to more people, and that is the idea of realizing that you have the ability to say no to things, to clothes. I have a criteria list for people that if the piece of clothing you're looking at doesn't meet all seven criteria on the page, that they need to leave it on the rack. They need to leave it in the cart. They need to not buy it. I also tell people to unsubscribe from absolutely every clothing brand that they have in their email, especially the ones that start the subject matter with sale, which is a huge thing for people. And I do encourage people to set an amount of time that you will not buy anything. It's hard, but it gets easier because your pocketbook is happy, your closet's happy. I recommend 6 months. It's a game changer. A few years ago, my husband lost his job and we decided to downsize at that point. And we went from 2,500 square feet to 900. And I thought, this is going to be terrible. What am I going to do with all my clothes and everything I own? And it was amazing. I loved it. I still love it. The idea that you can live more simply and biblically is, I got a lot of ideas from Joshua Becker in his book. I think it's The More of Less. He has a course too that I send my clients to. And then I think there's some fun things you can do. You can create a capsule wardrobe. That's a big term today. It's everywhere. But that confirms that you have a lot of clothes. But it also increases your creativity. And another thing I encourage people to do while they're doing a capsule wardrobe and they have all these extra clothes is to consign them or to sell them. So there's secondhand stores, vintage stores, and there's consignment. Consignment will actually buy your clothes from you, or they'll take them and sell them and give you money. The other day I woke up and I thought, you know, why do we always give our worst stuff to the thrift store? What if we woke up and said, I'm going to give my best stuff today. I'm going to give things I love today to people in need, because a lot of the thrift stores are connected to charities. So yeah, that's some of the ideas. I love clothing swaps. I love accessory swaps. I do those with women in a community more because it really brings people together. It's fun. They don't spend any money. Do a lot of things like that. There's companies I recommend. I have an entire virtual catalog of companies that sell sustainable brands. There's also a company called 4Days that will send you a bag and you can put anything in it, including jewelry, shoes, old underwear, fabrics, whatever you want, and mail it back to them and they will make sure it doesn't go into the landfill. So it's a lot.
I wonder if you could define for us what capsule wardrobe means.
It's a really good question. So a capsule wardrobe is taking anywhere from my perspective, anywhere from 8 to 12 pieces. They're specific pieces. They have to go together in certain ways. And from 8 to 12 pieces, you can create anywhere from 20 to 30 outfits. So if you have a capsule wardrobe for a month, you may not wear the same thing in a month. And then if you start a new month, by the time you're done with 60 days, you may have worn the same outfit twice in 60 days. So it's a very specific set of clothes that you want to choose and that goes together. And you want it to be pieces you love, because for me, when I'm working with people, I really want them to unearth some of that creativity inside of them. And there's nothing better to help you be creative than when your choices are narrowed. We think it's when we have a lot, but it's actually when our choices are narrow.
Yeah, I'm focusing in on that word creativity because it sounds like this whole endeavor of greening your wardrobe really takes some creative thinking and perhaps even some bold choices. It does sound like there are lots and lots and lots of ways to solve the problems just by thinking outside of the box. I mean, you mentioned the possibility of doing something with community and groups. Tell me more about that. Like, how could you actually engage community in helping one another to address these issues of clothing?
I have found that I can gather a group of women pretty fast if I talk a little bit about what I do and just say, let's get together, bring your clothes you don't want, and let's have a swap. Even the ones that are the high introvert people will come. So I do that. And I think that because I can talk about it, which is what I want people to do, talk about sustainability in the earth and why we have so many clothes, that creates that ripple effect that people can go out and talk. Another thing I do is wherever we are, I find the thrift stores and I go in there and I meet the people that work there. And I talk to them and I say, what are you doing to get the word out about what you do? and the fact that you have all this great stuff. And I find that a lot of times, because they don't have a huge marketing budget, they're not getting the word out. And so I do all I can on social media to get the word out. And wherever I am, I talk a lot about, okay, look at this resource we have where you could shop, and look what good you could do for the community. So for me, it's talking a lot, but and really think that just one little nugget here and there for people allows them to go talk to other people, which I encourage. But I think finding stores in your area and talking to the owners or the people that work there and saying, what can I do to help you? Especially if you're interested in clothes, you could go in and say, can I style some outfits for the window? Can I go to some businesses? I do this. I'll go to businesses with a letter and it outlines what I want. And I'll say, if you could gather 30 pieces of clothing from the workers in this building that don't want them, I will come by and pick them up and bring them to the charity. So I think that's one of the things you can do is, you know, ask if you can do things like that.
Yeah, I'm thinking actually of the thrift store that's close to my house. It's a Goodwill store. And I do know the people there and like them very much. I think what I've not maybe taken time to think about is there are ways that I could actually affirm what they're doing. I mean, the fact that they are repurposing clothes for people at a reasonable price, that's a good thing. That needs to be affirmed. I don't know that they always see the goodness of the work that they do.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that.
It makes me think that when it comes to thinking beyond the surface of an issue, even the good things that we can do deserve some critical thought. And the reason I bring that up is because I'm hearkening back to a time when one of my summer jobs in between college semesters was working in a warehouse for a charity that sent clothes to Africa. So just mountains and mountains of clothes. My job was to put them into this giant press that squished them all down and created bales out of them. And the bales would be loaded into shipping containers and sent off to African countries in particular. What I learned later on was that probably I was contributing to some really significant damage to local economies in Kenya because all the clothing manufacturers and shoe manufacturers were put out of business by the charity that gave away free clothes to everyone. But also the clothes that were being sent were odd American t-shirts with strange slogans that people would have no idea what they mean. But it's just, you're also disrupting the cultural continuity of clothing. I'm just offering that as an example of how even when we try to do good, we probably have to be careful about assuming that in fact we're doing good, that it's maybe more complicated. So it probably behooves us to do some research in terms of the solutions that we invest in. Would you agree?
I do agree. I think it comes back to awareness, just trying to figure out what's going on. Clothing companies do help in some economies bring lots and lots of jobs to people and bring those people a lot of help. But I know what you're talking about because I've seen the effect of that. And so I think it's a Pandora's box in some ways when you start to open up the idea of clothing, what it is and where it comes from and why we wear it. It's a big issue. And there's a lot of places you could go, which is why I've just decided to focus on a couple things, which is traceability and people. Otherwise, I would be crying most days, I think.
No, that's such a good point. I mean, we often hear that from folks on the podcast that there is never an end to the good you can do, the wrongs that you can correct. But we have to do what's in front of us, do what we are capable of, do what matches our calling even, and focus on that so we don't get overwhelmed.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I wonder, when you think about the people you work with, what are some of the toughest challenges that you come up against in your mission to bring awareness to sustainable and ethical fashion?
Besides what we talked about earlier, sort of reconciling being an environmentalist and then being a faithful believer and how hard that is, I think we have to ask ourselves a question, and this is what I bump up against a lot. Do I really believe this scripture that says, love your neighbor as yourself? And it's just so basic. Like, stop thinking that everything is I, me, me, me. You have work to do in the world. Let's get up, get dressed, and get on with it. And really come against the sort of focus on the self, I think is the thing that I come up against the most. And for me too, I do that too. Like, oh, it's all about me. But just knowing that there is this biblical mandate to care about the world, to care about the poor, the widow, and the orphan, I think it should change your mind. And bumping up against that is probably one of the toughest things. And then I think in our culture, in America especially, we might look good on the outside, but when I'm working with women particularly, and some men, I always bump up against the question they're asking themselves internally, if not to me, which is, do I have value in the world? Do I matter? Men and women buy clothes from a compulsive place. That's the problem. But they forget that they're more than their appearance. And so the things that I struggle with are the internal things that people are saying to me, especially when they look in the mirror and I see something beautiful. I see a person, a human created in the image of God, and they're cringing or they're noticing something that I don't even see. So what I'm talking about here is that the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves, which includes others and especially God, almost 100% of the time that I'm working with clients, I'm bumping up against some kind of shame. And it just seems inherent in our culture somehow. We tell ourselves stories about how we should look or not look, this narrative of shame. It's such an intentional attack to dismantle our awareness of anything, of who we are, why we matter, what we should be doing in the world. So I just think we have to be thinking about those things when we're working with people and try and be like, how can I help you? How can I help you? Because it's a lot. In my field, this is what I come up against the most.
Let me ask you this. When it comes to thinking about the health and the future of the planet, how would you describe your state of mind and heart on the scale of hope and despair?
Well, the fashion industry itself, the change is like moving an iceberg, slow and painful. I'm hopeful some days, and then some days I'm in despair when I see pictures of rivers that have dried up and chemicals in the water and people that just, they're starving and not making enough money. I think that I manage the moments of discouragement by, I just get quiet, I get with God. I sense a lot that every breath we take is a gift from Him. And He's in control. He's going to do the work He needs to do here, even if we're screwing things up. So I do have hope. More and more people are aware of what's going on in the environment. They're seeing it, even in the fashion industry. And I think the work needs to be collaborative. So there's not a lot of collaboration between the designers and the people that make our clothes and ourselves. It's amazing how creative people can get. There are materials that clothes are being made from now that you wouldn't believe. Things like pineapple leaves, flax, algae, mushrooms, grapes, plastic water bottles. There's a really cool designer that I put into my virtual catalog that I love. Everything in there is made from waste, which is not a bad word. It's not garbage. It's made from the waste of what happens when you get rid of plastic bottles or plastic fishing nets or something like that. So with technology and people in the industry changing it slowly, I just think we can reconcile sometimes that the beauty that surrounds us with the loathsome realities, those are the greed and the apathy and the selfishness that we talked about earlier.
It seems to me that you're the kind of person who probably derives a lot of hope from a sense of mission. Like, there's nothing about your job that isn't purposed, that doesn't have a deeper meaning. And that in turn, I think, gives you a sense of significance. Is that a correct read?
Yeah, I hope so. That's a very humbling thing to say. Thank you. I have a friend that a year ago said to me, you're in your 60s now. Are you going to retire? And I looked at her. She knows me well. She looked back at me and she goes, you will never retire. That's not you. You have a mission. And I do. I really feel like there's a lot of work to do in the world. No matter how old we are, what's going on, we should all have a mission.
Well, what I like about your example is that you're taking a vocation that people wouldn't think about as necessarily green, and you're making it green, right? You're finding ways to change the world in your sphere of influence. And I think that is an encouragement to people in any job. Just with some deep thinking, possibly some prayer, we could find ways forward to add significance to what we do and to have a sense that we're actually making changes that need to happen.
Yeah, that's so beautifully put. I love that. Thank you. I'm encouraged by what you're doing. I was so excited about the fact that somebody's talking about this from a scriptural point of view and saying, look how beautiful it is. I look forward to putting out your information and just saying, hey, look at this. Look at this. Look how amazing things can be when you collaborate and care.
Yeah, and talk to each other and know that you're not alone.
Yeah, and talk to each other. That's right. Amen. Amen.
We've been in conversation with Kathleen Audette of Allegory Styling about the ways that our clothing choices impact the health of people and planet. For more information about her work and to access some of the resources that she mentioned, go to this episode's show notes at earthkeepers.online. You'll also find information about the Ecological Leadership Cohort that starts soon, so we hope you'll check that out. I'm Forrest Inslee, your podcast host. Our executive producer is James Avedon, and our producer is Dave Olfers. Colleen Meggerly is our editor and researcher. Forrest Reed is the creator of our original music, and Jesselyn Gentry is our social media director. Thank you, friends, for listening, and please join us for our next conversation on the Earthkeepers podcast.